and welcome to Your Mind Matters, NPL's first mental health awareness podcast where we discuss mental health and all things related. I'm your host, Lana Bolijack, with the Education and Literacy Department.
And I'm Bassam Habib with BUL at NPL.
And today we have a very special guest. We have talked with him before, actually, when we were just starting this this whole initiative with Your Mind Matters. So we'll give a warm welcome to Mr. Jamal Nesbitt. He's from East Nashville's Melton Counseling. Jamal, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing well today.
Good. It's so good to have you back. We have had like so many people just at NPL who were like, that Jamal guy, he really is like... He's so great. Like,
he has the smoothest, like, sounding voice I've ever heard.
That's part of the reason why we were like, we've got to get him on the podcast, because everybody liked him so much. So,
well, thank y'all so much. You know, it's a pleasure to be here. Just kind of, you know, I'm enjoying this journey. You know, I'm enjoying the journey.
Yeah.
Being a part of this. So, that's awesome.
Awesome. Well, we'll get into this pretty soon, but just a little icebreaker before we start. What is your favorite food or meal?
Oh, man. So, favorite food or meal. So, I'm very much a foodie. Mm-hmm. So, right now, though, you know, I'm missing home. I'm missing the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm missing conch salad right now. You know, conch salad is, you know, it's one of those things that I'm craving right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I ever had conch.
Have you
had it before?
I've never had it.
Yeah. It's kind of the shell that people put to their ears and they're listening.
Okay,
and
so yeah.
You can hear the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really good. Really good. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. You know, with a lot of pepper.
And I'm hungry right now, so oh, now.
Yeah. Is saltfish and ackee, like, in the Bahamas too, or is it just like a...
Jamaican thing.
Jamaican.
Yeah, it's in... We can make it in the Bahamas, but it's more a Jamaican
It's
dish.
More a Jamaican thing.
Yeah, we do. We do conch and dough, crab and rice.
Wow.
You know, it's stew fish, boil fish, you know, it's... We do a lot of stuff in the Bahamas, but...
I'm so hungry.
Yeah. Good old Johnny cake.
Oh, I love Johnny cake. I love Johnny cake. Oh, wow. Man, I haven't eaten, like, at all, so I'm, like, really hungry.
I feel like Johnny cake has a weird... I don't know the history of a Johnny cake.
I don't either.
Where that even comes from.
Why is it called Johnny cake? Do you know?
I'm not even sure. I didn't know it tastes good.
We should Google that after. That's what Google is for, learning.
I should know this stuff, but, you know.
Who is Johnny and why is his cake so good? Okay, well, let's get into the discussion. Before we do, I just want to throw a little disclaimer out there that today we are discussing a sensitive matter. Surrounding suicide awareness for Suicide Awareness Month. So if there are any triggers or any things that make you feel uncomfortable, this episode is discussing that. If that's not something that you want to hear right now, I would suggest maybe going to another episode. But this is strictly informative, and we're here to give information so that if you or if a loved one or someone that you knew or know is struggling with suicide or suicidal ideation, we encourage you guys to listen, and hopefully something that you hear will help you. So, Jamal, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do?
Well, I graduated from Bethune-Cookman University in Daytona Beach in 2016. With a master's in mental health counseling. I finished my bachelor's also from Bethune-Cookman in psychology in 2014. Even since my undergraduate years, I've been working in mental health. I worked at a place called Eagles Watch before, and it was more a place to where it was people that they lived there. So there was, you know, no coming and going, more the people they lived there, where it was quadriplegic. Maybe some people had schizophrenia, being on a spectrum, autism, and different things of that disorder. But I've been there since for probably like 3 or 4 years, because I kind of figured, one of my mentors told me, if I'm going to be in the field, I might as well get into it as early as I could. And that was something that I can do without having my bachelor's. So I started there, and from since then, I worked in crisis units dealing with suicide prevention, of course. They have a process in Florida that's called Baker Act. So if you knew someone that was experiencing suicidal ideations, and if you called, they went into they were able to get support in a facility for up to 72 hours. you know, it's mandated. So it was, I worked at a place like that. I worked in homeless prevention. I worked as a case manager. I worked in, you know, so many interesting jobs, you know, Florida Autism Center. Worked in the school setting, and I got to the place to where I'm currently at now. I'm coming from outpatient therapy and working with depression and anxiety and different disorders. I specialize now in couples counseling and working with families. I still work with anxiety and depression and try to help people to kind of find their support and find their safe zones to kind of process some of the things that may cause them intense amounts of stress. But I found out just through my experience that most people that I talk to, when they're going through stress or trauma or they're living a certain lifestyle and they're trying to escape from it or kind of deal and cope through it, some of the thoughts go back to childhood. So my belief system is that if I can work with individuals and I can work with couples before they decide to have families and before they decide to get married or move forward with their lives, and hopefully, you know, they have the tools to maintain what it is that they commit to. And then the next step that I go into is helping them to get to have the skills. So if they want to have families, then they have the skills to pour into their children and the children can have the tools to maintain safety and support. And if that doesn't work, I try to help families, you know, if they're going through divorce processes or breakups, to at least try to work it out. And if they can't, to do it in a way that's healthy. And then I work with the kids that's affected by broken families. So that's kind of how I structured it, because it typically ends up back into childhood. So I try to help the kids, and if I can, I try to help individuals before they have kids. And then I go back to the kids. So that's a little bit about, you know, what I do now.
That's the whole lifespan.
Oh, yeah.
You're helping the whole lifespan.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. I know you don't really think about that either with the, with like, family planning.
Yeah.
Like, am I prepared to pour into a child? Or am I prepared to give a child like a healthy mental space?
Yes.
Especially when you're like 20, like,
yeah,
or even early 30s. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
People are not thinking about that.
Nope.
Yeah, they're really not, you know. And even it's interesting when people meet so early, one of the things that happens is they tend to forget that the person that they chose to commit to is growing as well. So you change along the journey. So that's one of the things that I help people with, because as we get into this topic, it's sometimes a place of stress when you feel trapped and you feel like, oh, man, I'm here. What do I do?
Yeah.
How do I get out of this? We have three kids, but my spouse don't respect me.
Yeah,
you know, or I don't have a handle on my finances. And I always tell them X, Y, and Z, but they don't listen to me. You know, it gets there. And when you start to get into the root of these things, it comes from places that if we have support or we identify other options, then we can work through it. So that's why I try to help to get into it early.
Yeah.
You know.
It's really cool to watch somebody transform and change in a relationship. I like that. Like, being like friends with somebody for a really long time. Just even like, not even like dating intimacy or anything like that. Just friendship and just seeing like people go through transformations and be like different people.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Like, it's like a whole different relationship.
Yeah. Right? And it keeps it interesting too. You don't want to stay the same. You don't want to be with the
Absolutely.
Same person.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that is, I didn't know that about you, that you had done all of that before coming to therapy.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, being a caseworker is a pretty intense.
Oh, yes,
pretty intense situation.
Yeah, it's very intense. Right? You know, being in the homes and you become a guest to somebody's real life. I tell people, I'm like, you know, I'm like a commercial.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here. I have some value that I can support to you, but you're the main character. And so I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm just here to support you for what it is that you may want to do or you may need. So,
hype man.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Hype man for your mental health. Yeah. That's what therapists
That's
and counselors
cool.
are.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can tackle some of these questions here. Let's just talk about some myths about suicide.
Well, some common myths that I hear is, and this is just speaking from an angle because I also work in a school system. So I work in Sumner County Schools as well. And I just talk to a lot of kids. Mm. And sometimes one of the myths that I hear people say as well, if they talk about it enough, they're not serious. They're doing it for attention. And that's a very dangerous myth because one of the keys that I learned is nothing that we do in life is selfless. We only breathe because if we don't, we die, right?
Yeah.
So there is an innate part of us that does want human contact. We do want, we're social beings. And I think we mistake that for attention. We want to be social. We do want to have some level of engagement with someone else, but it should always be taken serious. It's not to be taken as a game. I hear another myth that's connected to that when they say, well, they only want attention, is that, you know, they won't really do it. They're not serious. But we can't gauge anyone's level of seriousness. As a matter of fact, because they may not understand the severity of it, it's actually more dangerous. It's like a baby walking next to a pool that don't know how to swim. They don't intend to put themselves in harm's way, but it can get very dangerous. I had a kid that kind of was speaking to, and we were talking about why, like what problem does suicide solve? And the reason I like to phrase it that way is because we do it for a reason. Or people think of it for a reason or try to attempt it for a reason. It's usually to solve or eliminate a problem. They would say, oh, well, because I don't want to hurt no more, or because I don't want to be a burden, or because I think that life would just be better with me not being here. And one of the myths is that it's the only way to solve a problem. You know, it's when we're in fight, flight, or freeze response, we eliminate all of our options. We have two options, either fight or flight, right, or freeze. Mm. When it's suicide or suicidal ideations, it's like, hey, I don't have the ability to stop this pain or what I'm feeling. The only option is this. So it's not only one option. There's many options. The key is to have support so you can start to think about what your options are. For instance, if it's financial and someone that may be in debt financially and they're overwhelmed, they're afraid of what their family may think. They're afraid of the shame. And they say, well, I can't deal with all of this. I just got to find a way out. If it's permanent, right, you're making a permanent decision for something that's temporary. What about moving to a different location? What about going to another city? Well, I can't possibly move. I have too much here. Hmm. Well, if you end your life, where does that leave things, right? It X's out all of that other, the reason why you can't. And this is what I mean, to build more options. You know, what if it's too expensive in New York and you can move to Alabama, right? Well, I just can't leave. Well, either way, right, it's going to end the same way. So that's how we like to expand, that it's more the myth of them not being serious or the myth of this is the only option or the myth of they won't follow through with it. When people are desperate, it only takes a split second, you know.
Is it a myth that if once you start spiraling down that like rabbit hole of suicide that you can't get out of it yourself, or like can you talk yourself out of things like that, like the financial stuff or like moving or something like that, or do you always need the support?
Well, it is best to have support. It's always recommended to have support. It's like if you're drowning, you don't try to learn how to swim in the middle of drowning, you know. You have main thing, but there is scenarios to where people do talk themselves out of what they called. Sometimes they have interrupted suicide. That may be when someone is thinking about ending their life, and someone else walks in, and that's all it took, or a friend called, you know, or they thought about something. That's what's called aborted suicide. They can abort, you know, walking to a certain location, planning it out, and then just thinking about grandmother. And it's so it's possible, but it's not recommended to be alone, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
I'm trying to decide how vulnerable I want to be here.
Me too. Because I'm like, we're about to put our whole life on the mic right now. We've been doing. I put my whole family on blast, so I put myself on blast. Now it's time to put myself on blast.
I will say, I won't say too much, but I will say that there was a time when I was younger where I was struggling with the thought of not being here anymore. And so my mother had just passed away, and there were some things happening with school and friendships that was really jarring for me, and I didn't know how to really handle it. And I remember the thing that kind of interrupted my thought process was I thought of about my dad. Like, we had just buried my mom, and I was like, you know, what would that do to him to walk into a space and see me, you know, not breathing or something like that? And so that broke my heart just to imagine my father being like, you know, without me, without his wife, what does he do now? And that was the thing that made me kind of be like, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be responsible for what happens with his life.
Yeah.
I wonder also, just kind of with piggybacking on the myths, this idea of like, if someone that you know commits suicide, can that in turn make other people suicidal? I know there's this kind of like trickle effect idea that some people have thrown out there, and I'm not sure how based in reality that idea.
Well, when we talk about suicide, it can have an effect on people, but everything that we do has effect on everything that we do. So it's not to isolate it and make it like this thing that's just only affects because it's suicide.
Yeah.
We have what we call classical conditioning, which we learn how to solve problems from the world around us and from people. For instance, if we grow up, just to use a more relatable space as well, if you grow up and you watch your parents, and let's say, for instance, every time that, let's say if you're used to seeing them argue, but any time that they argue or they upset, the way that you see them solve the problem is by buying each other food, and they just sit around and eat. And that becomes the almost like a ritual. Sometimes when problems happen, that's how you may look to solve them. Hey, do you want something to eat? Hey, let's just... You may not have heard the conversation. You may not have heard the apology. You may not have heard the things that happen behind closed doors, but it can lend itself to influence. And that's with anything that we do.
Yeah.
So with suicide or going into those spaces where you have suicidal ideations, the way that it affects us is looking at it as a solution. Mm-hmm. When you say, oh, well, that's a solution that they chose. This is a friend. This is a loved one. We respect people. We love them. We tend to comb through the behaviors of other people. If we have someone that's really into music, sometimes we like music. If we have someone that's really into sports, sometimes we like the teams that they like.
Mm-hmm.
We want to support people, show empathy, and be there for them. And if it's something that we respect and love, and we notice that they've been through it, sometimes it's like, hey, maybe that is an option. Maybe this is how things, not to say everyone thinks that way. I know that's very general, but it is possible. We can impact each other's moods. Have y'all ever heard of mood contagion?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, they had a therapist by the name of Albert Bandura who did a bubble doll study. And he went through how classical conditioning can affect us, which they started with a bubble doll. It was like a, you know, those clown dolls, you hit them and they come back, you hit them and they come back. It was one of them. And it started playing with the doll. The kids kind of mimicked it. And he started punching it and, you know, making certain sounds. And over time, the kids started doing that as well. And, you know, they found out about how we can be conditioned by things, which social media can have an impact on the way that we see things in every area. Being around certain personality types can have an impact on us. And it's not ostracizing or putting anyone in any space, just to say that's why it helps to have support. Because if someone's hurting and they're in a space to where they feel like they're drowning and they're, you know, they just can't catch a break and life is going a certain way, the most important thing is to support them, because sometimes that support can help them to get out of that space, to kind of see the light, see the value in themselves, to see that they're not in the way, that they're not a bother, that they're not taking up space, building their confidence. But even supporters need support so that way they can help them to move forward.
Yeah.
You know, because we have what we call vicarious trauma. You know, you can, it's kind of like watching the news all day about things that may be sad, or and then you become sad. You didn't experience it yourself, but you can feel people's experiences.
Yeah.
You know? What were you saying before about the mood?
Mood contagion. Mood contagion.
Yeah, mood contagion.
Yeah, mood contagion is kind of like, have you ever walked into a room full of happy people and just feel like, oh, you know, it's our brain reading the body language. It releases chemicals in the brain and it matches what the mood is. Or if you walk into a room full of sad energy or somber, you may feel, oh, man, it's kind of heavy in here.
Yeah.
You know, it's the reason that is because verbal communication is only 7% of communication. The other 93% is nonverbal. We call paralanguage, which you don't even realize you do it. You know, I tell people babies are master communicators. They can communicate with you without words, and they can read you without, you know, fully understanding. So much so that they learn the language. And just kind of going along in life being babies. They let you know when they're hungry, sick, tired, sleepy, without using words. And the parent starts to remember that, wow, I knew this language. You know, I know the language they're speaking. I forgot it, but I spoke it before.
Yeah.
You know, and they kind of start to read it up. So babies are, I tell people, study babies.
Babies and like 4 to 8-year-olds.
Oh, yeah.
They will tell you exactly how they're feeling.
Yeah.
With no filters.
No filters at
and
all.
And then it makes you, like, realize, like, how, as an adult, you've completely filtered everything. Like, most thoughts and, like, most of yourself is, like, filtered.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, it's interesting, too, how, like, 90, would you say 93%?
That's crazy. How is that even measured?
Communication is nonverbal. Right. And, like, considering how... I mean, just thinking about, like, how people can sometimes feel isolated or feel, like, not wanted or not important. And they walk into a space and they're reading how people respond to them without even speaking and making up these ideas in their head that, like, oh, this is, like, this is reinforcing this idea that, like, I'm not really worth being here.
Right.
And how do you go about, if you're someone who is in a space where you're thinking about or you're experiencing suicidal ideation, how do you go about arresting the thought? Like when you feel that nonverbal communication, when you don't feel like you're in a space where you're welcome or you feel extremely isolated, what are some practices that people can do to kind of recognize that in themselves?
After having support and, you know, getting to that space of confidence, because you can do it before, but when you're in crisis, the main thing first is to work through the crisis. Like, there's no, even in therapy, we say there's no reasoning when you're in crisis. It's not a place for reasoning or thinking through complex thoughts. It's a time to get to stability and get to a place of calm, get to a place of, okay, balance, and then we can go through some of those things. But when you're there or if you're not in crisis, what's tend to help sometimes is to start reframing. I ask people all the time when they say, hey, this happened. I say, is it true? They say, yeah, well, that's how I feel. And one of the things to remember that feelings are always real. They're always real. If you're mad, you're mad. That's real. If you're sad, you're sad. That's real. If you're happy, you're happy. That's real. But thoughts can always be challenged. I was talking with an individual, and just not to self-disclose anyway, but talking to an individual, and sometimes what happened, let's say, just to use an example, if someone was looking at them, and they interpreted the look as curiosity, they may feel a different way. But if they interpreted that look as jealousy, they would feel a whole nother way. The look is the same. Their thought changed. So challenge the thought and ask yourself, is it true? When you say, hey, no one cares about me, why don't anybody care about you? Well, they don't care about me because they leave me out, they isolate me, they don't talk to me. So that's the interpretation. So when you say, is it true? What is the evidence that what you're thinking is not true? Meaning, okay, well, sometimes we talk. Sometimes they call me. Sometimes we go and do X, Y, and Z. Sometimes they check on me. And then we start to process those things. This is where support comes into place because the best surgeon cannot perform surgery on himself. They always need another surgeon. So these things take support. We're social beings. You know, technology advanced faster than human development. So even though we have all of these things, you know, think about 100 years ago what things were like. That's a grandparent ago.
Uh-huh.
You know,
that, not even. For me, that's either. Like, that's literally my parents.
Yeah,
like.
You know.
Yeah. Right, you know. Some of us with older parents.
Yeah, you know.
Especially growing up in Egypt, they didn't have, they didn't, yeah. They were like yeah. landline phones that were like on yeah. the wall in like the yeah. 70s.
Like. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm telling you, so that, and that's where it comes from. It comes from mindset. It really challenges what you identify, what you think, how it affects how you feel, and then it affects the action. So mm-hmm. that's what we call the CBT triangle. So what am I thinking, and isn't what am I thinking true? Now, when you reframe it, it may not be desirable. You still may not feel great, but you may not feel as heavy as the first thought. Yeah. So, for instance, you have a friend, and you're walking, and let's say you're going down Broadway. This is your best friend, the person that you talked to, y'all grew up since kindergarten, whatever scenario it is, right? You see them, you look across the street, they look at you. And you wave, and you say, hey, and they're like, oh my. And when you wave, they turn around, and they walk the other way. And you may be like, oh, okay, what does this mean? You start to feel like, why is my friend ignoring me? Did I do something wrong? Why are they upset with me? They seen me, I seen yeah. them, they turned the other way. The next action, sometimes people may take an action of texting. What if they ignore your text? Now they get upset, and they text again. Then they end up sending the text that they can't take back. Mm-hmm. You know, then yeah. they apologize for that text, and it keeps going. It's a spiral. Think, feel, act. Think, feel, act. Think, feel, act. Now, let's say if instead of thinking that, you know what, my friend ignored me, my friend is upset with me. What if we thought, hey, it's a lot of people out here. Maybe they didn't see me, right? We can't prove either one, right?
Yeah.
Can't prove either one, but the feeling is different. And then the action is different.
Yeah.
I learned that from actually, like, so one of the six-year-olds I hang out with, he yeah. bought Sour Patch Kits, and he yeah. started crying. And I was like, what's wrong? And he was like, it's not sour. It doesn't yeah. taste sour. And I yeah. was like, well, you know, maybe we just got a bad batch. Like, yeah. maybe the next one might be a little more sour.
Yeah.
And then he just goes, maybe if I just tell myself in my brain that it's sour, then yeah. it's going to taste sour.
Yeah. yeah.
And then he started eating it and yeah. enjoying it. Like, yeah, yeah. So yeah,
it's a process, right? It's,
yeah.
That, but that takes, it takes being grounded to do that. It takes yeah. support.
Yeah.
Because you supported him.
For sure.
Yeah. But when we get older, it gets way harder. Like yeah. as a 31-year-old, I don't think I can just tell myself
right.
something and then start believing it immediately. Yeah. It's going to take me like a minute to yeah. start believing it.
Yeah. But that's true. It takes but. Start small.
Yeah. yeah.
You're right. It isn't easy to do. We have to believe what we're sharing with ourselves. Yeah.
For sure. I'm curious about that too. Like, what things or do things on in the external contribute to a suicidal ideation or thoughts of suicide? Or is it like a sickness? Is it mm-hmm. a chemical thing? Is it both? Like, what's your...
That's a good question, man. It can be where they say a disease of the mind. It can't, just like addiction, they said. Addiction yeah. is a disease. But what can happen in different states, for instance, let's say if someone is in a position to where they found out, like, if someone has a tumor, cancer, or something of that nature, sometimes their mood drastically changes. And they will find out afterwards that they have the tumor cancer because they may be depressed, they may be anxious, they may be just going through a place of severe depression, may take a urine sample or end up going to the hospital, then they may detect it. But it can change your hormone imbalance, change the chemicals that your brain releases, because ultimately what happens when we're happy and we're sad, when we're anxious, it's just our brain releasing chemicals to the body.
Yeah.
Because we're, once again, we're much less developed than our technology speed. So just like the some things we don't even think about, the idea of a yawn, right? Someone will yawn, it will make you yawn. Some studies show that that comes from the hunter-gatherer era, or just the primitive side of things, showing that when you're in nature and someone yawns, they're vulnerable. you yawn back to show them, hey, I see you, you're safe. I got your back while you sleep. Mm-hmm. It's just an awareness of the person's tiredness. We can't, you know, it's, we're not there anymore, but it still remains prevalent. So to go back to the, when you talked about how can the environment affect us, it's kind of like a garden. What you put in the garden or what happens in a garden can affect everything in the garden. It's not to judge any particular person.
Yes.
But it changes things. The only difference between a garden and a jungle is one is maintained, kept, and tilled. Mm-hmm. If you leave a garden to itself and you come back in a year, you wouldn't know, you know, that it was a garden. It does take effort and energy, and it takes community. So, for instance, I had a family member who I'm suffering from depression and just in a bad space. Like, anytime I would talk with him, he's just in a bad space. And I remember he was just fed up, and he went back to the Bahamas. And a part of the Bahamas that I'm from is Andrus, Bahamas. So it's very remote. You know, it's the biggest island in the Bahamas. But you're not going to go and find any Walmarts, McDonald's. You're not going to see any of that. It's very rural, remote type of area. And he just had his glow back. You know, it's, and I'm like, well, what happened? What changed? He said, you know, just getting away from all of these things and getting into a better place where I can be more grounded and I can find myself. I can take time. Things slow down. And when he said things, he's talking about the environment. You know, it's the environment that I recommend to people. If you ever find yourself in a space, whether you move to a new city, you just left to go to college, you're in a different space, it takes time to adjust. It only helps to keep removing yourself from the environment as an option before removing yourself from life. You know, keep that as an option because you can always move back if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, the environment can affect. I just been to New York for the first time, like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And if I was to come from the Bahamas fresh and drop to New York and haven't been any place else in the U.S., I don't know. I couldn't even imagine because it was a lot. And I lived in the U.S. for a long time.
Yeah.
It was a lot. I found out how to maneuver and to make it fun. But it can be overwhelming. Yeah. You know, seeing no trees where I was at, no greenery. I'm like, what? Where do I sit? I don't know where to sit.
It's disturbing. It's like horrific.
Yeah, you know.
It's horrific. You know, to just walk down the streets of New York.
Yeah, it was very. I bought me a chopped cheese.
I keep hearing about them and I want
one. Oh, they're beautiful. And just walking, like being in Nashville, I can buy something, I can find a bench, I can sit down, I can eat it. I bought it as if, you know, I'm in this environment. There was nowhere to sit. You couldn't sit anywhere. It wasn't a bench in sight. And I'm like, wow, I got to go back to my room, wherever that is.
Keep it moving,
I just
buddy.
Eat and walk.
Move.
I just ate and walked. So the environment can play a part. So if you're dealing with households, broken families, substance abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse. It can make you feel small. It can make you feel broken.
Yeah.
And sometimes we can adapt and adopt those things like, well, the reason that my parents fight is because of me. If it wasn't for me, then the family would be happy. My mom cries every day. My dad, he's always angry. But because it's a custody battle, they don't know it's not about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just involved. They're in the garden.
Yeah.
It's being dug up, you know. And if you have two farmers that started a garden together and they're no longer friends, they're going to try to split their crops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the farmers knew each other before the crops were made.
Yeah.
So I try to, even when I'm talking with kids, your parents, of course we have to get to that conversation, but people have lives before each other.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents had a life before they knew each other, if you can imagine, you know. They had a life before they knew you and they had their own insecurities. Those things don't stop because they have kids, you know. And so it's a environment does play a big part. And that's why when I'm talking to couples, I try to bring these things up before they even thinking about marriage.
Yeah.
You know, before they even thinking about kids, just to help them to think towards the future, but to be grounded enough to where they're like, okay, I can still enjoy the present. understand what I'm doing now. I can be present focused, but I can have goals for the future and identify that there's time, you know, give myself more options.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, the environment is like a huge thing for me. That affects me so intensely, and I'm trying to figure out how to not make it affect me so bad. But I did notice, like, when I came back, every time I go to Egypt and I come back, I do have, like, this big wave of depression that just feels like it's hitting me in the back of the head. Like, and it lasts for maybe, like, 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And then I get back out of it because I'm like, okay, that is just like Nashville life. Like, this is what life is like here. It's not like, because I'll go over there and I'll get used to like community and people talking to you no matter what, and just kind of like a more laid back vibe. But then I'll come here and then it's like drywall and you're alone most of the time. Like, you don't see faces throughout the day. One of the times I came back, actually was like suicidal. I was like, man, I kind of just want to just end my life like right now. And then I got freaked out because it was like midnight.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know who to call right now. I'm just completely alone. So I got in the car and I was like, I'm just going to drive myself to the psych ward.
Right.
And I went to the psych ward and I sat in the parking lot for like 30 minutes and I was like, what am I doing? Like, is this what I really want to do? Like, do I need to admit myself into the psych ward right now?
Yeah.
And then I walked in, I was like, do you guys take Cigna insurance? And the lady just like laughed. And then we laughed together and I was like, all right, I'll be right back. And then I went back and sat in the car and I was like, I don't need to go to a psych ward, but what I need is to go to a social place, like a place where there's people that I can just sit with. But I don't want to go to a bar.
Right.
The only other place that was open was Jenna's Adult Toy Box right across the street. So I was like, all right, I'll go walk into Jenna's Adult Toy Store.
Yeah.
And I just like took a lap and I was like just looking at all the people like thumbing through like magazines and like, and it, I don't know, something about that, like Jenna's Adult Toy Store saved my life, I guess. But it just made me feel better in a way of like, okay, people, community, like somebody... We can talk together. We can like be together instead. But like when you're alone and you're in that like spiral, it is so tough. Like it's so hard to like just get out of that.
it can be hard to shake, you know. And I tell people in moments like that, it's you never know where you're gonna find your peace at.
Mm.
But it's important. That's why people in general, it's important to be around people. Like think about it, even in the most. What they call the most inhumane, even in prison.
Yeah.
They would, the punishment is the box. You know, they separate you and isolate you from people. Some people can be in there for months. You know, just imagine months of social isolation as a consequence. And it does affect their mental. So that's why I tell people, look at the options you have. So it's like, hey, I'm so stressed. I'm anxious. I feel, you know, you can feel a lot of out of yourself.
Mm.
We call that adjustment. You know, it can last for 1 or 2 months. It's like the kid that had great grades and was going through, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they were just playing sports or doing whatever they did, or whether it's a boy or a girl. And next thing you know, the family breaks up. Now they're fighting. Now they're not coming home. Now they seem to be more irritated. They're adjusting. And typically what the child or the other person is worried about isn't what the parents are worried about. Typically what you need isn't what someone thinks you need.
Yeah.
Say, hey, I just want to be around someone right now. The reason it's harder as an adult is because as kids, especially in this environment in the U.S. or in other countries as well, you're social by default. You have to go to school. You put in programs. If you're spiritual, you go to your spiritual gathering, wherever that may be. Your parents do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's an independence of, it's kind of the difference between working a job but being a business owner. You're your own employee and your own boss, and you have to do all of it. But you need the skills to know what you need to do. Even if it's like someone say, oh, man, you know, if I had this, you know, I'd be so happy. Like if someone said, you know, I would love to go in my backyard and find oil. I know I'd be rich. But you even know the first step. you found oil in your backyard, you know, who would you call about the oil thing, you know? You know, who would you sell it to? Like, what happens? Do you call the wrong person and they take everything from you because you don't know what to do? You know, we know what we want in ideas, but this is why we go back to structure.
Yeah.
Recognizing warning signs. Social isolation is a warning sign. Having what we call manic, hypomanic, and, you know, it's being a down in the ups, the down in the ups. Those extreme changes in emotions. That's why teenagers or young adults are so susceptible, because it's extreme changes. I know parents with postpartum depression, their hormones are all over the place. It's up and down. They share in their body, you know, and shared it for months.
Yeah.
It has to change back. Our hormones play a big part. What we eat, what we watch. For instance, if you're getting consistent dopamine, let's say if you were to watch TV for hours on end, and you get this dopamine release. When you're not doing it, you can feel sad. You can feel low. Your brain stops releasing a chemical.
Yeah.
You know, and then now we feel depressed and we feel sad, we feel sluggish. It's like, okay, well, what did you do for the last 48 hours? Well, I got up, drunk caffeine, watched my show, listened to music. After I listened to music, I watched some more of my show. Then I went out with friends and got some depressant, you know, some alcohol, drunk some more depressant. Then I did the same thing the next day. Actually, I sleep deprived myself and I stayed up until 3 a.m. I did that. Actually, you know, probably got 6 hours of sleep.
Now I have one brain cell
left. You know, your body is depleted of all of it. But then Monday, you go to what people, mood contagion. Oh, Mondays. That's the attitude typically.
Yeah.
And now you have to try to pull yourself up. Behind, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, and you're thinking about, why am I not happy? Your environment matters. The way that you handle your body matters. The things you do with your body matters. I recommend working out, changing up your diet, doing something new. Your brain has what is called neuroplasticity. So many times we do something new, we taste something new, smell something new, go to a new place, experience a new experience, it can release natural dopamine. And now your baseline is a little higher. So it's like, oh, I'm just here now instead of here, and I need to pick me up. And I think it's very important to, these are the things that if we know, it becomes easier. Like when I first came here in 2019, moved from Florida, moved from Daytona Beach, me and my wife, we had one of our cousins was living here, but she moved from Detroit and was living in Nashville.
Dang, y'all moved right before COVID.
Right before COVID.
Wow.
In August, right? And I remember, just to show you how stressful things can be, I started my first day, I was working at a place called Youth Villages, right?
Yes.
And when I started there, I was coming to start as an MST therapist.
Nice.
I bought everything in my car, everything that I owned. I was supposed to start work on the 5th of August. I got here August 4th. Parked right on close by Korean Veteran. We were staying at some apartments downtown. I'd never been to Nashville. And as soon as I got here, you know, I got up in the morning, the car was gone. I'm like, oh, man, I got towed. And I called all the tow companies. Oh, we don't have your car. I'm like, what do you mean you don't have my car? My car got stolen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything was in the car. I went to work with what I slept in. I'm talking about passport, birth certificates, everything. As a matter of fact, I laughed with my wife because I bought a ring. The ring was in there too.
Oh,
we were still dating.
God.
And the ring was stolen. Everything was stolen. And I show up to work first day in slides, on Nike slides, and all this stuff. And I'm like, wow. This is welcome to Nashville moment.
Yeah.
They had the car it had to be very professional. 29 days, the 30th day to where the insurance was going to pay out, they returned it where they stole it from with nothing in it.
Oh,
except
wow,
a kitchen sink was in a trunk. I'm like, what is this? Still don't understand why. And through that adjustment, through the stress, not knowing anyone here, you know, those thoughts started to come, oh, man, am I in the right space? What should I be doing? And having support, my wife, you know, was a great support. We was able to push through it and keep pushing through it. And what we found, we started, of course, as this time, tornado hit, pandemic
oh,
hit,
yeah.
and all this stuff is still happening. So like, boom, 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 boom. What I started doing is a place called Abundant Life Adventure Club. And they hike. I never was hiking. I just signed up. And it was a group of people I started going with to hike all over Tennessee. And that's what I did through the whole pandemic. Mm-hmm. I've probably been to every water. I never did it in Florida, never did it in the Bahamas. It just was something new.
Yeah.
And it's finding what fits for you. I knew what I needed. I didn't know what would come about. I actually found out about it through a friend that I was on. We was doing tornado cleanup. And just one of the guys that was there, one of my good friends now, Matt, and he was like, oh, man, you know, I do this. I do real estate. I house flip. And we just clicked automatically. He introduced me to the Abundant Life thing. And it was, you know, it just went from there. So
that's kind of unbelievable. They took your whole life and brought it back with a sink. With a kitchen sink.
Kitchen sink, man.
It sounds like the Joker. Like,
everything.
I promise, man.
Well, it brings another, like, another meeting to the everything but the kitchen
everything
sink.
Everything but it. I laugh about it now.
Yeah.
And I still have part of it now at the house. I kept it.
That's awesome.
As a reminder.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, we have it. And Dang. It was a shower head that was connected to it. I don't know what that was doing. They had straws and events. But it's a whole different thing.
Oh, my God.
You know, but it's... For everything that y'all said, it's a combination of everything that matters.
Yeah.
You know, it's paying attention to the environment externally and internally.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have, sometimes we can have suicidal ideation from substances.
Yeah.
You know, it can be.
Yeah.
But that's all hormone, that's all imbalances.
Mm-hmm.
We can have it from, as a matter of fact, typically, like when we have those moments, whether it's psychosis or suicidal ideations, if you were to call, if y'all familiar with youth villages, and let's say a kid ends up going to the hospital and awaiting treatment, they typically wait to see how the child stabilizes first. And they say, okay, now let's see where the child is at. You know, they help the child get stable. If it's crisis, of course, we find locations. But typically what happens from what I've seen in these scenarios, a kid will go to some of these places like Centerstone or Vanderbilt. And, you know, like you talked about these Skyline and all of these places.
Yeah.
And they will go there, and when you check in with them, oh, they're doing so well. You know, you ask the kid, well, what was different? Well, there's people who understood, and I felt like people understood where I was coming from, and I felt like people really resonated with me. And it's an environment. Everything is scheduled, planned. You know, it's that thing that our parents used to do for us. You know, food, water, shelter, family.
Yeah.
It's the humane, too. Yeah. Like, they're the, I don't know, like, if it's, like, compassion or, like, kindness or understanding.
Empathy.
Or like, oh, empathy. Yeah, it's, like, just feels humane. Like, they're treating you, like, as a person and not as, like, this. They're not walking around eggshells around you.
Yeah.
Like, when you go into places like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Places like that are healthy, that are like doing it right, but the places that are not doing it right,
you
feels like, it feels like you're like prison.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask, you had mentioned something about like you had community with your wife before. Well, I guess before you guys were married, but when you moved here, and for people who like maybe that sort of thing happens to them, these extreme kind of like oh no moments, like. When you don't have a community, when you don't have a lot of friends, or you don't have family, like we have a lot of people here who come to the library every day who like they don't have family, they're estranged from their family, they don't have friends, they don't have anyone, and their resource, their community is the library.
Yeah.
But where do you go when you don't have that community? Where do you even start to find a community? You know.
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head. And I want to recommend, too, to really see how powerful it is, what you said. They come here every day, right? This becomes the community. Sometimes the community is what's around you. Like, if you don't have a space, whether you... Some people don't have good family history. Some people don't come from privileged background. Some people have scenarios to where the people that they trusted may have assaulted them or abused them when they were younger, and they have resentments to them. Some people may have struggled with substance abuse, and their family said, you know what, I'm just going to cut you off. I'm not going to deal with you. You know, like, and they said, oh, well, since my family don't want to deal with me, then I'm just going to push everybody else away. The first step is I'd usually recommend the places that's within your community first, like the public libraries, because these places have resources. If you're suicidal and you have places like Crisis Hotline, whether it's Youth Villages or you call Mental Health Co-op or you call that Suicide Prevention Hotline, typically the first step they do is they make sure that you're stable and you're safe. And then after you're safe and you're stable, then we identify what it is that we can help you with as far as the resources. Everybody's resources are different. I found boxing gyms that offered free boxing lessons. Mm-hmm. I found places people at offer free music lessons. I found karate stuff, bowling clubs, hiking, of course, libraries, resources. Sometimes it's just people that do movie nights. It's especially based on the age appropriateness, because some people want different experiences, especially young adults. They may want something different from someone that's 40. You know, someone that's 40 may want to just, hey, I need to relate to somebody. I need something different. You know, it may be a little different experience. So I think starting with where you're at, for instance, being in a city, we may not see it, but there's a lot of resources. Start with the first step, crisis, if that's where you're at. And then they would help you to identify those things. That's where we get case managers from. We have resources like you guys being at the public library. Someone that comes here every day, they start to become familiar. They become comfortable. They know who's coming here. They know it's not just going to be wiped away. You know, like, yeah. Oh, well, this is a stable place that's consistent. The reason I speak in that way is because we don't have all the answers.
Yeah.
All we do is communicate with people that has a passion for the community, and maybe they have some answers we don't have. So I start with the basics. The suicide prevention hotline, start with your naturals. Like if you're not in a crisis, check with your library.
Mm.
Check with the rec centers. And just start there. It's because sometimes on social media, it can be, like for instance, what I started doing, I start to look through things. I have two laptops, so I look through certain things to my laptop instead of going on my phone, because it has both worlds in there. It's like you do everything on your phone, and then you intended to go find something peaceful, then you see something stressful. You're like, oh, now I got to click the link. So it helps to, you know, it helps to disconnect and go to the libraries of the world, the people that, you know, then you start to find other resources.
Yeah.
This is a sacred space. The library is a sacred space.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's it's a non-biased space.
Yes.
And it's free. It's the last free space, really, in the city, I think.
Absolutely.
Other than parks, but...
Yeah. Absolutely.
So what if you have, like, a loved one that is, say, your brother or your child or somebody that's really close to you that you see every day that you live with, and... you're noticing all these warning signs. They're even saying it. Hey, like, I'm considering suicide.
Right.
What are some things that you can do to not only, like, help them, but help yourself?
Well, the first thing, and I tell everyone this, is we have a crisis line through Youth Villages. It all depends where you're at, because in Davidson County is Mental Health Co-op. So Davidson County Mental Health Co-op Services. And this, it gets kind of tricky sometimes, but outside of Davidson, you have Youth Villages that service there. The reason that's important is because sometimes because we're so close, we don't want the relationship to get weird, or we don't want the person to get upset with us. And we say, oh, I can't call because maybe I can help work through it. Separate the roles, because I have family members that's there, and I tell them simply, hey, I don't know what it's like in your shoes, neither would I pretend to know what it's like in your shoes. I don't know what you're experiencing, but what you're feeling is real. Like, if you're sad, you're sad. What I want to do is support you. People can choose to, you know, say, oh, I don't want the help, I don't want the help. But I have a saying that I learned that helped me. Is I'm not God. But even if I was, he doesn't puppet master us either. you know, he gives us the free range. What I'm going to do is provide as much safety as I can. Sometimes safety is just being present. It's like, hey, man, I'm going to come over. I'm going to, you know, I'm just going to come and just hang with you. Oh, man, I don't want it. Well, I'm coming over anyway. You know, what's the other options, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they're going to be mad at you. Yeah, sure. But sometimes we push people away with the hope that they fight to come closer. But that's mm-hmm. a mental thing. Like, oh, if you really care, why didn't you fight for me? Who's going to fight for me? Especially if you feel like you're not worth anything.
Yeah.
Why isn't anybody fighting for me? Just because I told you don't call me again, you really didn't call me again? At least text me.
Yeah.
You know, at least ask why. You know, it's, you know. That's
my mom.
You know, the people, we feel that way, right? And
so
I just say what the best way to support people is identify the difference between sympathy and empathy.
Mm.
Sometimes sympathy is, we don't do it intentionally. It's not conscious. Remember, the conscious mind is 10%. The unconscious mind is 90%. It's like if your alarm went off, you would know it wasn't a fire alarm or a police siren. But if it was a fire alarm, you would react accordingly without even thinking. If it was the tornado siren, you would react accordingly without thinking. You don't have to say, oh, well, what is that? Let me process. Let me write it down. Unconscious mind keeps us safe.
I do want to ask if there are any resources that come to mind for you in Nashville, whether they're free or not, just anything that comes to mind that people can go, people can call, people can visit. If they're struggling with suicidal thoughts or if their family members are struggling.
Yeah, I can definitely send them. I have quite a few, few things, but I'm going to share them on different levels. So let's say, for instance, if you're not there in crisis, but you're stressed and you want to work through some things as far as learning the structures and discipline, but you want to be more active, because sometimes it does raise the mood to do things that's more active or to eat different. We may not be there. You know, I know sometimes we may stress eat and we're not in the space to even start there. I found it's a place that I've been to before. It's a boxing space close to downtown called Healing Mitts.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they're really good.
Mm-hmm. Like,
what they do, they incorporated the steps of coping and dealing with things from a psychological space, thoughts, feelings, actions, mindfulness, groundfulness, deep breathing techniques, and they involved it with their boxing methods. Because ultimately, that's what it is. Like, when we're stressed, we start to hyperventilate. The body is saying, you need air. But if someone tells you, hey, breathe, what? That doesn't work. When you're stressed, your body doesn't even ask you. It makes you. It says, nope, you're going to breathe now. It can calm down those stressors. So I recommend Healing Mitts. It's a really good space. If you want something active, I've been there. We're very cool people out there. Really, really great space. Of course, like I say, youth villages, if you're in crisis, that's something, and I would send that information over to you.
Mm-hmm.
But the youth villages crisis hotline is something I feel like if you're in a space, you don't even have, if your friend calls you and they're just like, oh, man, you know, I'm feeling this way. They text you anything that you may be worried about. I just tell people, you don't have to be an expert.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is call an expert. You know, but I do have the information for Youth Villages Mobile Crisis, which is 866-791-9226. And if you're in Davidson County, it'll be Mental Health Co-op, and that'll be 615-726-0125. And that's if you're in immediate crisis. Or if anyone's in immediate crisis, typically what they ask you the information for the loved one or the person you care about. And if you know their address, if you know the numbers, just share it with them, and they send support. You know, it's all professional. You know, they make sure that the person is safe and they have what they need, and they provide what they need to that person, and they have adequate, you know, safety plans. So, you know, to take all of the pressure, you can be a support in the process. But no one person is the solution to anything.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a community. And that's, even to be in this organization, it's a lot of people that do a lot of things,
yeah,
you know, to make it work smoothly. So No one person is a solution.
That's a fact. Well, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Jamal, for joining us today.
Yes, yes.
Thank you for listening. And remember,
your mind matters.